This is an interview with Ray Beckwith for the University of Adelaide Oral History on the 15th of November 2005 at Nuriutpa. Interviewer Rob Lynn. Well, Ray, where and when were you born?
I was born in Cowell in February 1912, Cowell on the west coast.
Can you tell me a little bit about your parents? Who were they, Ray?
Well, my father was set up business at Cowell after he had travelled New South Wales on various jobs such as fitting electric bills and doing cornices in ceilings, odd jobs for experience. Then in 1910, he decided to set up business in Cowell as a plumber and ironmonger, I think they called it then. So he set up the business from a cold start and succeeded in that. He did a lot of tank making for the farmers because that area on the west coast, the Eyre Peninsula, was being opened up to farming. So he was busy making tanks for the farmers. And to simplify matters, he would make the first tank at a certain dimension. The second tank would be a little smaller to fit inside the first one. And the third tank would be smaller again to facilitate loading on the wagons. Well, off would go the farmers to their new property. He also set them up with the standard 400-gallon galvanised tanks that came in with crockery from Ireland. He used that as a pot for a still. He made the condenser, and the farmers went off with that. And now the reason was that the water, the brackish water available to the farmers in some instances, was too saline for horses. So they would distill some water and mix that back with the saline water to make it acceptable. And of course they had plenty of fuel in the nature of the mallee that they were cutting down. So he set that business up and succeeded. And in 1911, he built a house, had a house built at Cowell and paid for it and married. My mother was a music teacher. She was from Wallaroo Mines, as was my father.
What was her Christian name, Ray?
She was Blanche Beckwith. And Blanche Brown before marriage.
And your father's Christian name?
He was Arthur Henry. Arthur, yes. That's right.
So your mother was from the Copper Triangle?
Yes, that's right, from Wallaroo Mines. Her father was in charge of the stables, which was a very big setup with all the horses that were used on the mine. And my father's father was an underground miner. So back on that. Anyway, my mother, Blanche, she did her training at the University of Adelaide at the Conservatorium, finally gaining a fellowship with the Trinity College London. Moving to Cowell, newly married, she was in demand for playing the piano at concerts on various functions at Cowell. In the next year, 1912, I was born. And at the age of 6 weeks, there was great drama. I'm told that I'd swallowed the safety pin on the dummy and the safety pin was open. This happened on a Thursday, and that was just the day that the steamship Wandana came into port. So my mother and I were bundled onto the ship heading for Wallaroo, to her parents' home, and away we went. But all turned out well. The safety pin appeared the right way up in the nappy the next morning, so that was a narrow escape. Right now.
So Ray, your family then moves to Murray Bridge, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Well, Dad stayed, we lived in Cowell until 1919, and I went to school at the age of 5, and soon after starting school, I fell on a concrete step at the school, and broke my leg. Well, that meant I was put into a cot, much to my great disgust, going into a cot at about age 6. And Dr. Mitzenmacher was the man. He set the leg and put it in plaster and attached a cord over a pulley on the end of the cot, and then tied a brick onto that to keep the leg straight. So that was the drama of the school. In 1919, Dad had decided that any future prosperity related to water. So he looked at establishing a business in Mildura, or Murray Bridge, or Mount Gambier. You notice there's water as the main key there. Anyway, he got to Murray Bridge, and things looked favourable there, so he decided to settle, and that's where we shifted in 1919.
And Ray, did you attend school at Murray Bridge then?
Yes, I did all my schooling at Murray Bridge then until 1928. Which gave me the leaving certificate with some leaving honours,
and that was matriculation in those days.
Yes, that's right. Leaving. But the matriculation required English.
Yes,
you had to have English, and my first year at the leaving exam, which was 1927, I had enough subjects. But I didn't have English, and that was the year that only 30% of the students passed, much to the anguish of the parents, you might guess.
Yes.
So my next and final year at Murray Bridge High School involved being sure to pass English, and of course doing some other subjects as well. Well, that came to pass, and I finished up with about 8 subjects, I think, in the leaving and leaving honours geography.
How did you come to then enrol at Roseworthy, Ray, the Diploma of Agriculture?
Well, the Murray Bridge High School was an agricultural high school, and Arthur Hilton was the headmaster. He was keen on developing the agricultural side of education, and although they taught agriculture at Murray Bridge, I didn't include that in my list of subjects. He steered me in the direction of Roseworthy, and through him I applied for an education department Part 7 scholarship, which was based on the leaving results, and that was successful, so that scholarship took me to Roseworthy in 1929.
Now, what was Roseworthy like when you first saw it, Ray?
Well, Roseworthy appeared to me as a venerable old building. I'm talking of the main structure now, and yet it wasn't even 50 years old. But it appeared like that to me, and here we are. We've now passed the 100 years and many years ago, and it's still the same. Yeah.
Did you have some colleagues that you already knew, Ray, or were they all new to you?
The farm manager, Lance Beaumont, was from Murray Bridge, so that was a useful link. And he was an old student of Roseworthy also, and he advised me concerning the initiation to just take it. And that was the accepted way of entry to the college, to, through initiation, to accept the initiation as it was. And of course, the initiation was okay in many ways, but in some ways it was rather brutal, and some students took delight in putting the first years down. That led to some investigation, and there was a major strictures after that on initiation procedures.
Can you describe what happened, Ray?
Well, I can remember some of them. There would be the second and third years would buy first years as racers. So, okay. And we were put through two courses, a long distance run and a sprint. And of course the students were betting on that. That was okay. There was whatever. Let me think for a moment. I can think of some of the final stages, but some of the students were rather keen on putting the first years down to show them their place. And that wasn't so good. But then there were other features, and I can remember we had to be tossed into Cooper's Dam. So we'd be tossed in by everybody would be tossed into the dam, and okay, that was all right. And then at the last proceedings, we all had to appear in the gym naked, and we were crowned, and they had a pot, the usual chamber pot, and they'd fill that with warm linseed meal and all sorts of other mixtures, and they'd plump that onto your head and all this stuff. But it was warm, and that was more like fun. That was quite okay. And that was the final of the initiation ceremony. So there it was. But everybody accepted it. That was it.
And Ray, your course begins. Could you tell us a little bit about the course structure in those years, if you can recall that?
Yes, well, the course structure right throughout the 3 years I was at Roseworthy, the course structure consisted of fortnights. The first week was called A, and the second week was a B. The first week, the A week, first and third years would be at lectures. In the B week, first and third years would be on the farm, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, with the exception of the third years, they'd be at lectures Saturday. The second years, of course, would alternate on the A's and B's. So it involved quite a bit of farm work. Now, for dairying, we'd get out of bed about 4:15, and up to the dairy at about 4:30. And of course it would be the first year's students' job to bring the cows in, bring them into the bales, and then milking would go on from there.
Was it machine milking, Ray?
It was hand milking one side of the dairy and machine milking the other side. And so we had to do both.
How many cows in the herd?
I would say there were about 40. We were milking around about 40 cows.
So a medium to large herd for the time.
Yes, that's right. Mm. And, of course, the instructor, former student Dolph Baker, he had his special Jersey cow, Nadia, and he insisted on milking her himself. She was a very high-yielding Jersey, yielding over more than 7% milk fat. Oh yes, she was good, and that was his pet. Of course, I digress here for a moment, and okay, well, first years we'd be manning the separator. So away we'd go. On this one occasion, Wally Bell was on the separator, and of course the thing was, when you're on the separator, you take a salvital tin with its screw cap, fill it up with cream, and that'll do for breakfast. All right, well, that was done in the usual manner, but the problem in this instance was that the dairy instructor, Dolph Baker, and Wally Bell had coats of the identical pattern. Wally filled the tin with cream and put it in the instructor's pocket. When we got down to breakfast, where's the cream, Wally? Oh, it's not there. So somebody copped it with the loss of a few work marks for that day. Yes. Anyway, that's just a diversion.
A very good one.
And another activity, of course, would be on stables. Oh, I might mention that on dairying, the first years had to appear at milking every morning, whether it was a lecture morning or not. They had to be on deck for that. And also, with the stables, with a big mob of horses, the first years had to be on deck for feeding and preparing horses for work.
Where were the stables situated, Ray?
Right at the centre of the farm.
Yeah.
I can't give you a key to. I don't know how to relate it at the moment.
Mm.
But at the centre of the farm.
And were there many working horses?
Oh yes, it was all working horses, and we didn't have a tractor. It was all working horses, and we were using 8-horse teams. That was the usual thing. And for the what we called the Smith Plough, we had a 12-horse team, 12 horses abreast.
Was that the stump jump plough as such?
Yes, it was. Yes, that's right. But we also had stump jumps on the others as well. But there, I don't know the number of horses. I suppose it'd be 70 or 80, something of that nature.
A large number.
A large number of horses, yes.
And were they were drafts or half drafts, I guess?
No, they were drafts. They were Clydesdales.
Clydesdales.
Yes, yes. And of course, there was the stallion in his separate yard, of course. But for stables duty, that was 7 days a week for the first years, and only work days for the second and third years. And that entailed being at the stable soon after 5 in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and at night to finish off what had to be done. We had the first year had to go up to the stables after 8:30.
Mm.
So that was a very tiring week.
So the evening was for mucking out, is that correct?
Yeah. Oh yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That was done in the morning, in the daytime,
mm.
and of course you used the old horse Togo. He was the dray. He was the stables horse, and he had string halt, and that was very difficult to back. Poor old Togo, yeah, but he was a placid old thing.
Well, another Clydesdale, was he, Ray?
Yeah, well, yes, he was a Clydesdale, yes.
Now, Ray, what type of feed were the horses being given? Chaff?
Oh, yes, chaff, and also some concentrates like bran pollen.
And was that all produced off the property?
Yes, yes. Not the bran and pollen, no. but the chaff. We had a big hay shed and a big chaff cutter.
And would you have to do that as well, or was the chaff prepared by the workmen?
No, the chaff was prepared usually a workman with students. But that would not entail the people in stables.
Now, Ray, just as an aside, was the chaff cutter run by a stationary engine? Can you remember that?
Electric.
An electric one?
Yes, yeah.
So did Roseworthy College have its own electric plant in your day, did it?
No, we had mains power.
Coming in from Gawler?
Yes, Gawler and up to Wosley's.
Well, I didn't know that, Ray.
Yes. I can well remember that when the football final, when I was playing in the Bees, and it was so windy, I can see those wires, they were almost horizontal. It was terrific wind. So that's what I remember. My memory of the power lines. Mm. Yeah. Well, coming back to this, if I could just follow on with the stables, teams would be allotted on a list drawn up by the farm manager. The list would be posted in the college hall, and then students would know how they were situated. And if you were on a team, you had to go to the stables, groom your horses, put on the winkers and the collar and hames, and prepare them before breakfast. Then after breakfast, you'd go up and assemble your team. Yeah, you had eight horses. Well, you'd have to get them out to paddocks quite far away, and that meant you'd have to take them out as usually a 4x4. It was a bit iffy trying to get eight horses through the gateways, yeah. And you could damage them. So that was the thing. I have a vivid memory of using the 12-horse team. You can imagine 12 horses abreast. Mm. That is quite the reins went out at a very broad angle. Mm. And we're going along finely, and the coupling between, in the middle of that, between the two sixes, the coupling broke, and of course the horses, they had to go right around. That was quite a feat to put everything together again, because they carried all the swingles and the levers with them, and they were heavy.
Right, and was that during your first year that happened, Ray, was it?
No, I think that might have been happened in the third year.
Third year? Yes. Goodness me, what a disaster.
it was a disaster. And, we had, with an eight-horse team, I've had the coupling brake on the implement connecting the horses to the implement. The coupling, main coupling, is broken, and away go the horses and yank me off the machine. Now that's all right. There's all these heavy levers and horses. How the heck do you get them back again? So I remember taking one horse out and with his chains and hooking him on and dragging everybody else, dragging all the other horses backwards. You see, because, well, you're on your own, and you're not strong enough to lift to do that job, but to pull all that gear and the horses back to the implement. So that's how we got round it. Yes, you had to be a bit practical on some of these things.
So, Ray, was the practical side part of it, was it, really just learning as you went?
Oh, yes, that's right, yes. But we had, still with the horses, we had a very good assistant farm manager. His name was Gurner, G-U-R-N-E-R. He was first war light horse, and he had a feeling for horses. and he would make it his business to see that the horses were handled properly. Mm. And when we were out in paddocks, the nose bags would be delivered for the horses. We had a 1.5 hour lunch break, and that gave the horses a break. And if students weren't careful and the horses had got their nose bags over the barbed wire of a fence and couldn't get the food, they'd get a ticking off from the farm manager. He was meticulous on that, which was a good thing, of course.
Ray, did each of the paddocks have water, or was that at central points?
No, most paddocks had water. Most paddocks. Sometimes you might have four small paddocks, and the water is in the centre of the four paddocks. Yes, the water was available right through.
So is that piped in? I can't...
Yes, it was piped, yes. Mm. Yeah.
Then, Ray, you've described the course from the word go as being in fortnights of theory and practice.
Yes, yes.
What did the theory of contain for you in those early years?
Well, the usual lectures in as I've listed here in agriculture, viticulture, dairy, botany, mathematics, physics, chemistry, they're all included in the lecture days.
Who were some of your teachers, Ray, that you recall?
Well, of course, the principal was W.R. Burks, Walter Richard Burks. And in viticulture, fruit culture and oenology was John Williams.
Yes.
Referred to as Jock.
Jock.
In dairying, I've mentioned before, there's Dolph Baker. And the veterinary subjects, the veterinarian was Bill Bennett. He also taught us entomology and microbiology. In chemistry and physics, there was Alan R. Heckenbottom. In botany, we had a nice old boy, we used to call him Bees Adams. I don't know how that eventuated, but he was a nice old chap. But when he retired, there was a chap, a university man, a clerk. I've forgotten his first name. But I digress for a moment and...